Last case in our calendar, 06-1304, Marlene Leininger versus Pioneer National Latex. Ms. Curtis.
Mr. Chief Justice, thank you, and may it please the court. I would like to reserve 2 minutes for rebuttal, and I will be yielding 4 minutes of my time to Mr. Greenberg.
We have a clock there for you, so you're going to need to figure out a way to keep watch your time.
Okay. 4 minutes of my time to Mr. Greenberg, who's arguing on behalf of the amicus. For more than a century, employment relationships in this state have been governed by the employment at will doctrine. In Greeley, this court recognized a limited public policy exception to that doctrine in those circumstances in which the termination of an at-will employee threatened other important public policies in our state. The issue before the court today involves the proper scope of Greeley claims based upon the public policy enumerated in a statute, particularly the Ohio Civil Rights Act, Chapter 4112. The Fifth District, relying exclusively on this court's decision in Livingston versus Hillside Rehabilitation Hospital, held that the appellee was entitled to maintain a wrongful termination claim premised upon the public policy expressed in Chapter 4112. The decision of the Fifth District should be reversed for 3 reasons. First, the plurality opinion in Wiles versus Medina Auto Parts provides the proper framework for analyzing wrongful termination tort claims. Applying the Wiles framework to the facts of this case requires reversal of the decision below because the statutory remedies available under Chapter 4112 are sufficient to vindicate Ohio's public policy against employment discrimination. Second, this court has consistently recognized that the wrongful termination tort is a limited exception to Ohio's general rule of employment at will. Nonetheless, the Fifth District's decision is a classic example of the exception swallowing the rule and is an improper expansion of the wrongful termination tort. Third, recognition of a public policy claim premised upon Chapter 4112 subverts the proper balance between the legislative and judicial function. For that reason, the appellants are specifically asking this court today to do 2 things. To overrule the decision of the Fifth District by doing 2 things. One would be to expressly overrule the decision of the court in Livingston, and 2 would be to adopt the framework that was enunciated in the plurality opinion in Wiles as the guiding principle of law on the wrongful termination tort premised upon a statute.
Counsel, part of the outcome in Wiles, I did judgment only. I've come to regret that because I hear from a lot of lawyers that that's helped create confusion, and I can't unring that bell or do anything about that at this time. That I did judgment only would surely indicate that I don't agree with the opinion, but I agreed with the outcome. And in that case, it was the Family Medical Leave Act.
Yes.
Which would seem to me is a far different stature in terms of employment and employment at will than termination for reasons of age discrimination or termination for reasons of hostile work environment, as Collins was. Those are major differences in degrees, it would seem to me, factually.
As in terms of the severity of the conduct complained of?
Yes.
Okay.
In terms of the severity and the inappropriateness of the activity of the employer. And part of your brief focuses on that. If I've read your brief correctly, you're suggesting that the only benefit to this plaintiff is an extended statute of limitations to find a public policy tort here.
Yes, I am suggesting that
the full panoply of remedies that would be available under a common law tort for firing for age discrimination. The only thing that would be different is a four-year statute instead of a 180-day statute.
Yes. Well, appellants are arguing that the...
Isn't that what your brief says?
Yes. That the statutory remedy in 4112
is
sufficient
is
to protect...
Is a full-dress remedy, except that it's got a terribly short statute of limitations.
Well, I do disagree in part with appellee's suggestion that there's the ridiculously short statute of limitations. It is true that one portion of 4112.02N, contains a 180-day statute of limitations. We also have 4112.14, which there is discussion in the briefs about confusion on this issue, Bellion, does it apply to 4112.14? As I read that opinion and this court's decision in Morris, the statute of limitations on 4112.14 will be 6 years, which is the same as everything else under Chapter 4112.
And what gives rise to that cause of action?
Gives rise to 4112.14?
Yes.
The exact same thing, discrimination in employment based upon age.
So she's still in court then, since she came
in
4 years?
Yeah, she could have pursued, on the wrongful conduct she's alleging, she could have pursued a claim under 4112.02N, 4112.14, 4112.99, the Age Discrimination in Employment Act at the federal level, or she could have pursued an administrative remedy.
So your argument is if she had chosen another statutory remedy, she would have had a 6-year statute of limitations.
My argument
for the same conduct that she's alleging took place.
Yes, under 4112.14.
Okay.
Counsel, when you mentioned that we should expressly overrule Livingston, I don't think your brief referred in any way to Westfield versus Gladys, which articulates the test that must be met before we can overrule a decision. Would you comment on that?
I can, and I apologize for omitting that in my brief. The Gladys decision sets out three parts that have to be addressed for the court to essentially not follow stare decisis. And one of those is that change circumstances, that the circumstances have changed such that continued adherence is no longer necessary. And I think that's true here, because Livingston was premised on 4101.17, which has been recodified as 4112.14. However, I think it made sense then to consider it in isolation because it was in another portion. It wasn't part of the Ohio Civil Rights Act. And it did contain limited remedies because in Hoops, the court had already held that there were no compensatory damages for 4101.17. The court had held there were no punitive damages for that. So I think consistent with its opinions at that time and based on the statute at issue, that made sense. That has changed. 4112.14 is now part of the comprehensive Chapter 4112. So I think it meets that part of Gladys. The second part of Gladys is that it's been widely criticized or, confusion. And I don't know anything right now in my practice that has been more confusing than the wrongful termination, tort based upon age discrimination because of Wiles, Kulch, and then what does Livingston mean, decision without opinion. So I think that we have satisfied that element. The third element is no undue burden upon parties who may have relied on the prior precedent in Livingston, and I think we certainly meet that because any person complaining of an aggrieved individual who has suffered employment discrimination can proceed under any of those statutes I just named for you, whether Livingston stands or does not stand. And so I think that we satisfy that element of no one is harmed by changing Livingston to say no public policy tort here.
Well, no one is harmed is in the eye of the beholder. Your brief does suggest no problem with Collins.
Collins is distinguishable from the facts of this case.
But you seem to embrace the notion that the court, it was okay for, and even perhaps a good thing for the court to do what it did in Kulch and in Collins, that is finding a public policy tort that fills gaps where the statute was inadequate.
Yes, Your Honor.
I'm summarizing your brief, but that's what you
seem to be
saying.
Yes.
And I take it an extension of that would be your understanding, as you indicated, that employment at will is a common law doctrine. So when we find a common law remedy flowing from what the legislature has already indicated is a conduct that is not desirable in the workplace, such as discriminating against people on the basis of age.
Right.
Firing whistleblowers.
Right.
The Collins activity of sexual abuse of an employee, making the employee feel that she had to quit.
Mm-hmm.
And you find the court's movement in all of those okay, and you don't seem to criticize that.
I would say that I think, and I would submit to the court that Collins reaches the outer limit of this court's authority to prescribe this type of common law tort.
How so?
Because that was the first time that the court directly had before it the statute clearly excluded Ms. Collins. It clearly said if you work for someone with four or less employees, you are not entitled to protection under 4112. And the court nonetheless reached its holding, which I think was permissible.
I'm interested in the outer limits of our authority to deal with the common law doctrine that the court recognized and created in the first place, and that's employment at will.
I'm sorry. I don't think it represents the outer limit of what this court should do in terms of construing additional remedies beyond
flowing from
a statute.
From the implications of a statute.
Exactly.
And
That's what I meant to say. So while I would agree that contrary to the assertion of the appellee, you don't need to overrule Kulch and Collins and Greeley to get where we want to go. In those cases, every one of those cases, you had a plaintiff who had no remedy without this court's recognition of a tort. And Ms. Collins was not responsible for creating her lack of remedy.
Right.
Ms. Leininger was responsible. She could have availed herself of multiple statutory remedies, but she did not comply with the statute of limitations. She's not in the same position as Collins was. And that's what I meant by outer limit. If the court has no other questions, I'm going to yield to Mr. Greenberg.
Thank you. Is it Greenberg? Mr. Rosenthal checked in.
Partner, Mr. Greenberg's not here.
Mr. Rosenthal,
Your Honor.
You're as good as he is.
No, that's okay.
Okay.
Good morning, Justice.
Mr. Greenberg.
I'm Dan Rosenthal.
You're Mr. Rosenthal.
Yes. Okay. Yes, Your Honor.
Yeah, we got that straight.
You met co-counsel, Ms. Curtis, here.
I have.
And meet Mr. Conway over here as your opponent today.
We actually have talked for hours, but
Mr. Rosenthal.
I'm not sure of much, but I'm sure I'm Mr. Rosenthal, Chief Justice. I'm here for Amicus Ohio Management Lawyers Association urging reversal, and I say with all respect and appropriate clarification of Ohio public policy. We believe that the Wiles plurality reasoning, as far as it goes, supports reversal. But, Your Honors, we're asking for more. We're asking the court to trim back properly the public policy employment tort. Your Honors, in our constitutional form of government, it's for the legislature to legislate, not the courts. We're asking this court.
So, counsel, you want the legislature we can get out of the business altogether. We can eliminate the common law employment at will doctrine and say it's up to the legislature.
Your Honor, what we're asking for this court to do, with all due respect, is to straighten out the confusion that it has created in the lower courts by usurping the assembly's authority.
We have a small fish here, and you want us to swallow a whale, I think. This fish is whether or not there needs to be a common law tort on top of the statutory remedies for discrimination or the firing of someone based on age, allegedly based on age discrimination.
And
we can answer that narrow question in the negative, say, no, there doesn't need to be one because she has the full remedies, and stop right there.
Your Honor, I believe the time has come for the court to do more. If I may say, when the assembly creates a right and sets forth any remedy or enforcement procedure.
So you don't like Collins? It was all right for the veterinarian to chase the female help around the office and create a hostile work environment, and because he doesn't come in the clutches of the law because he employs less than five or however many was. He was a small employer, so he's outside the reaches of the law.
Your Honor,
he should have been able to do that without any consequences.
Your Honor, there are torts that cover that, but I'm not talking about Collins. I'm talking about Greeley, and I'm talking about Kolch. In each of those cases, the assembly created a right, and it set forth a remedy or an enforcement procedure. And, Your Honor, I contend that in our constitutional form of government, that was the complete expression of public policy.
Mr. Rosenthal?
As to that right. Yes, Mr. Justice O'Donnell.
If I understood Ms. Curtis's position, she began by asking us to consider overruling Livingston.
Yes, Your Honor.
And then in answer to Justice Lansinger's question, she detailed why it was that she thought that was a justifiable position. But the entirety of the majority opinion in Livingston says the judgment of the Court of Appeals is reversed, the cause is remanded to the trial court on the authority of Kolch. So my question is, if we overrule Livingston, are we by implication overruling Kolch, and do we go through the Gladys analysis again?
Your Honor, perhaps, and I'm urging that on behalf of the OMLA as the court's action, that Your Honors overrule Greeley and Kolch. And if I can explain why and why that's consistent with Gladys, I can do so very briefly.
That would be up to the Chief. He's watching the time, and
I'd like to hear your argument.
Your Honor, the only
Jeopardy.
Excuse me?
Uninterrupted.
The only Jeopardy question should be, has the legislature set forth a remedy or enforcement procedure? If the answer to that is yes, then for this court to go further is a usurpation of the assembly's exclusive authority. It's at odds with our constitutional form of government. As to Appelli's arguments on this, the distinction between single and multiple source public policy, that's counterintuitive. More statutes and more remedies don't mean that an additional public policy tort is needed. Your Honors, stare decisis is no impediment to overruling Greeley and Kolch. First of all, I assert respectfully they were wrong at the time, and I urge Chief Justice Moyer's dissent in Greeley and Justice Cook's dissent in Kolch as stating the proper view of the court's role in our constitutional democracy. Second, under the stare decisis authority, they've created confusion in the trial courts trying to decipher the limits of judicial boundary crossing. Your Honors, when rights have been created by the assembly in statutes that set forth remedies, there aren't any logical legal principles that trial courts can apply to determine on a consistent basis if additional remedies should be created. And as the third stare, I'll wind it up. Your Honors, nor is the Wiles approach comparing statutory remedies with tort remedies for adequacy provide a workable approach for the courts below. The determination of adequacy of a remedy for a statutory right is a function reserved exclusively to the assembly. Your Honors, the bright line we urge is simple to apply, and it's the only approach that is harmonious with the separation of powers. Thank you very much.
Mr. Rosenthal, Mr. Conway.
Morning, I'm Mike Conway. I represent the appellee, Marlene.
That's Michael Terrence Conway, is it?
Correct, Judge.
Thank you.
Correct. There's a lot of Mike Conways out there.
Yeah, there's only one Michael Terrence, as you probably understand.
That's right.
I'm partial.
Our response to the appellant's argument that Wiles is controlling of this debate is that nothing could be farther from the truth. The Wiles decision is limited to its facts. This court pretty much so held in that case. It was addressing the issue as to whether or not a public policy tort claim could be gleaned from a federal Family Medical Leave Act statute. The court did not go beyond that. Wiles has changed nothing about the public policy tort claim field. It merely...
And Wiles, or the federal act also does not apply to the small employer. Is that correct?
That's correct. Under
what's the number?
That's 29 U.S. Code 2601.
No, but I mean under how many employees?
Under 50.
Under 50 employees.
That's correct.
And in Wiles, was Medina Auto Parts under 50 employees?
We didn't get that far, Your Honor, as you may recall, since you and I were both in that case. We did not get to discovery, and there was a question hanging, and I don't believe the court addressed it, as to whether or not there were a set of facts where a plaintiff in an FMLA case should have public policy tort claim action, because like in Collins, the statute limited its relief to an employer defined as having four or more employees in the FMLA same circumstances. So there is a set of facts out there that has not been addressed under Wiles.
Well, counsel, as you know, I disclosed in asking questions to your opponent, she makes, I think, at least a reasonable argument that you, when you analyze, unlike the suggestion that we're just misguided and the lawyers are having a hard time making any sense out of any of our decisions in this area, she seemed to make some sense out of it and say, look, what you were doing in Collins, what you were doing in Kulch, there were real gaps in the remedies available to the employee, and that here there is no gap in the remedy. There's a short statute of limitations, but the full range of remedies that would be available at the common law are available under the statute. That's, if she's wrong, tell us why she's wrong, but that's a pretty compelling argument, isn't
well,
it?
Well, our response to that is it's not clear as to whether or not all the remedies for age discrimination are available to plaintiffs in this state, unlike, say, sex or race discrimination. Well, I'll get to the statute of limitations in a second here. But the fact of the matter is the age discrimination statute 41-12-14 is very limited equitable type remedies. And I believe this court held in the Ocher case.
Say that again. You say under 14.
4112.14.
Which has the 6-year. Statute of limitations.
Well, you see, the confusion is there was a case that said that, and I believe that was the Morris case, and then there was another case that followed that. It was either Bellion or Ocher that said if your case is premised upon a violation of 412.14, you're stuck with 412.02N, which is 180-day statute of limitations. And the problem with, and aside from that, if usedom generis is followed where the specific controls are general, plaintiffs in the state should logically be stuck with the remedies in 412.14, which are very, very limited. So that's one source of confusion.
So you disagree with Ms. Curtis that when she indicated to us that the same remedies under the common law for an age discrimination case are available to a claimant under 412.14?
That's correct,
Your Honor. See those as disparate?
I do, Your Honor.
In what respect?
Well, under point 14, you cannot get compensatory damages in the terms of emotional distress. You cannot get front pay. You're entitled basically to reinstatement with back pay. And one of the problems is that, let's say someone like my client is fired, and they don't discover because they were lied to about the reason for the discharge, why they were terminated until a year or two after the fact. They're out of luck if the court reverses Livingston. And the real problem is that with the way the statute's set up, a age discrimination plaintiff has to file a lawsuit after they get terminated because there's no discovery rule Under the Oker case, there's no discovery rule. You've got to file a lawsuit when you get terminated, whether or not you know you've been a victim of age discrimination. That cannot be fair. Livingston has been around for a decade, and I think time has shown it is a good decision. Matter of fact, it is the legal theory behind it is indistinguishable from that in Collins. I don't see how you can overrule Livingston and not Collins at the same time. They're premised on the same legal theory. And as far as the idea that Wiles is controlling this debate, Wiles it was a single source for public policy, the right in one statute. Age discrimination rights and remedies are broad. They come from many sources. I mean, the appellant cannot argue that it was Ohio public policy to engage in discrimination before the legislature passed 41202. And on top of that, the fact of the matter is the U.S. Supreme Court and other states, including this one, I believe, have made it clear that when you're dealing with discrimination, you should have all the relief available. You should not be limited to one set of remedies. You should be able to have all the resources available. It is public policy to end discrimination in employment. As the AARP pointed out in their brief, 1.5 million people in Ohio are in their organization alone who would be adversely affected if Livingston was overturned.
We have an age discrimination claim here, but it's been argued to us by Mr. Rosenthal. We've got his name right here. We should go beyond just the limited facts here, and we really ought to look at the field. And he suggested that we ought to not only overrule Livingston, which relies on Kulch, so we overrule Kulch, but then go back to Greeley and make a statement, I think is what he's suggesting to us, that where the legislature has set forth a statutory remedy, there is no public policy tort available. And that really is basically what he's asking us to do. Would you respond to that position?
Sure, Your Honor. What the amicus for the appellant is, in our opinion, asking the court to do is engage in a form of tort reform. They've attempted to get the legislature to overturn Livingston, and they've not been able to do it. As late as 2003, there was a bill that never got passed in the legislature dealing with an attempt to overrule Livingston. The legislature has had many opportunities, if it so chose, to overrule Greeley, Livingston, Kulch, all these cases. It has not done that. We can only infer from that they also agree that the Livingston case and cases like it are good law and they make sense. And as far as a constitutional scheme is concerned, this court has common law powers. It's had them ever since it opened the doors. It is not required to subordinate itself to the legislature just because a pro-employer lobby wants you to do it.
Where is the line drawn? This case raises a historic tension in our country, a common law system where we have court-made law and law made by the legislature. And there are articles written about it, there are cases written about it, about the tension when the General Assembly doesn't speak. The courts have, everybody I think agrees, the courts have the authority to create law when a case comes to them. The battered women syndrome is a good example. Some defer, some courts say, well, that's a legislative matter, we want the legislature to do it. But there's no question the court has the authority to write law when there's no statutory law. When the General Assembly has spoken, then we have the problem, the issue, don't we? That is the tension. How much should a court fill in what the General Assembly may not have addressed? And what have you thought about this in those terms to give us some sort of guideline or standard that we would use?
Sure. Our view of the matter is that if the legislature is not indicated as attempting to preempt the field, or if the Constitution does not delegate to the legislature constitutional preemption, for example, the classic example is the dormant commerce power. The Congress doesn't act, therefore it's inferred they're legislating through silence. We believe unless the field is solely occupied by the legislature, the court is free to make common law rules and common law case law, and it should. I really don't know how a tripartite system of government like we have can function if The judiciary is not allowed to look for shortcomings in legislative acts or to take care of plaintiffs when they don't have adequate remedies or no remedies at all. The judiciary has a rich tradition, and I do not see a conflict here, especially where the legislature has not overruled the Livingston case. They want this court to reverse itself on the Livingston case, but the fact of the matter is there's no compelling reason to do so. There's no evidence that that will doctrine is somehow being usurped by this court's pronouncements. There's no evidence that Ohio businesses have suffered. There's just no evidence at all justifying reversing Livingston. And to take that to the extreme, saying we ought to reverse Greeley and Colch and all these other cases, they are just plain old engaging in tort reform. And that is something that is, that's something the legislature can do if they want to, but they have not done it. We respectfully, if there's no further questions, respectfully request that this court affirm the Fifth District.
Counsel, just so that I can understand the remedy portion here, would it be a fair statement that the remedy portion in 12 is much broader than the remedy portion in the remedies available under 14? So if you're under 12, punitives, full range of remedies that comparable to what might be available in common law, but an 180-day statute. Under 14, much more restricted remedies, but a much longer statute of limitations.
Yes, sure. And we believe if it came down only, and we believe it shouldn't come down only one thing, but if it did come down only one thing, the statute of limitations for age discrimination cases is quite frankly unfair. And again, we're looking at a situation where an age discrimination plaintiff, someone who's older and more vulnerable, has to figure out whether or not they've been discriminated against within 180 days of termination. Many times they can't do that. We in the trenches find out frequently, like as in this case, my client learned she had been made a victim of discrimination a year or two after the fact. You would have to file a lawsuit whether you know what your victim status is or not in order to protect your rights under the current scheme, the statutory scheme. That cannot be efficient and wholesome judicial policy.
Thank you, Mr. Conway.
Thank you.
Ms. Curtis, you have used your time, but you may take 30 seconds.
I'd just like to clarify 2 points. One, I believe that when we're looking at the adequacy of the remedy, it is not appropriate to isolate 41-12-14 and then say, are those remedies adequate? If the public policy is age discrimination, we should look to the entirety of the statutory scheme, which includes 41-12.02, which has complete tort relief. And I would just submit that on that, applying the test from Wiles, the decision of the Fifth District should be overturned.
Thank you. The case is submitted. You'll be advised of our opinion.